character of God. So it's anything that we either break the law of God or break that character of God that makes him who he is, or it's anything that we are not willing to change in our lives in order to change to become like the character of God. So we talked about that, and we talked about how sin is serious. Now, when I talked about that last time, I said, you know, saying sin is serious is one thing, but understanding the seriousness of it and the consequences of it's another thing. We sometimes ignore our sin, and when we do that, it escalates all the way to the point of death. We talked about the flood, and we talked about how God could not find one man on earth that was thinking anything good at any time. They were thinking evil all the time. And so he destroyed mankind, with the exception of 8 people that he chose to save. We talked about, you know, all of these different times where God punished the people for their sins. And we're going to talk about a little bit more about that today. We also discussed how Israel was ignorant of their sin. We went to Micah chapter 6 and we talked about how God came before the Israelites and laid a case out against them like a court of law. He said, this is your sin and this is what you have done, and I cannot believe you've done this because I have done all of these wonderful things for you. And Israel responded with, but God, what are we supposed to do? How much offerings are we supposed to give you? Why can't we just keep on sinning and just bring you 1,000 rams? Should we give you our first child? They were ignorant. They didn't understand the concept of sin and how serious it was. And Micah beautifully explained it to them. He said, all the Lord requires of you is to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And that's where we went last week. And then we very, very briefly discussed the idea that our growing to maturity in our spiritual walk never stops. And that's where we're going to start today. And never, this, our growing, as we are Christians, as we decide to grow to maturity, as we are learning how to grow, become mature Christians, we never can stop in that process. That process is continually going, and we're going to talk about that today. We're going to be in 1 Kings today. I asked you to do a little homework assignment when I was here last time. So if you weren't here, you didn't know about that, and that's okay. If you didn't read it, that's okay too. We're going to discuss it, but we're going to be in 1 Kings. So if you have your Bible with you, turn to 1 Kings. We're going to be there for the majority of this, at least the beginning part. We're going to talk about the life of Solomon. I thought it was great that Ecclesiastes was used as the scripture reading this morning, because Solomon was the wisest man on earth, and we're going to learn that here today. So as we start talking about Solomon, Solomon is looked at as a man of great triumphs and great failures. We're going to see that in the beginning of his life, in his kingship, I guess you could say, that he is a wonderful ruler. He is doing everything that God asks him to do, and he becomes just a wonderful, wonderful ruler, and he's very wise, and we're going to find out why. But at the end of his reign, things are going to change, and we're going to see why. So we're in 1 Kings. We're not going to read anything just yet. We're just going to talk about it a little bit. Okay, so let's talk about Solomon. Where does Solomon come from? Solomon's father is King David. Now, if you remember King David is actually called in the Bible as a man after God's own heart. Okay, King David is continually, if you read the Psalms, you can see how the heart of David is on fire for God. He's always continually looking to please God, and he's always asking God for guidance, and he has a relationship with God that I hope that we can get to someday. He really talks to God. He really has that conversation with him, if you read some of that. But King David, he commits a sin. King David looks out across the rooftop, and he sees a woman named Bathsheba bathing. And he says, I'd like to have her for myself. So he sends a servant to go get her and bring her back. And he commits adultery with her. And then, long story short, he actually commits murder of her husband so that he can keep her. Okay? And this is, I mean, these are, we look at these as major, major sins. Now, in the eyes of God, sin is sin. Okay? So anything is sin. You know, when Moses struck the rock when he was supposed to talk to the rock, God called that sin. That was just as bad as what David has done. But David has adultery with Bathsheba, and they have a son, and that's Solomon. So this is who Solomon is. Now, Solomon wasn't supposed to be the king. He wasn't the next in line. Okay, Absalom was supposed to be king, but Absalom dies, and then Adonijah is supposed to be king. And so when David gets sick at the end of his life, Adonijah kind of declares to everyone that he is now the king. He takes over the kingship. But Bathsheba finds out about this, and she says, no, that's not going to work because, you see, David promised me that Solomon was going to be king. So she goes to David and says, I thought you said Solomon was going to be king. And so David says, you're right, I did promise you that. And so David has to go through the process of anointing Solomon king before he dies. So Adonijah, in this story, he becomes afraid of Solomon because he thinks that since he tried to steal the kingship per se, that Solomon's going to harm him. And so we have this like dialogue between, and that kind of comes in there as well. Okay, so during the early part of Solomon's reign, God comes to Solomon, and he says, I want you, your father David has followed all of my commands. He's done everything I've asked of him, and I've promised him that as long as he and his sons continue to follow my commands, that he is always going to have an heir on the throne of Israel. And he says, he basically says, your father's a great man. Now he comes to Solomon and he says, I want to ask you what you want. If you could ask of anything of me, what would you ask for? And I'm amazed by the response that Solomon gives. And this is what he says. He says, I want a discerning heart to govern God's people and to distinguish between right and wrong. I don't know many people that would ask for that. You know, he could have asked for anything he wanted. This was God. God could have granted him anything. And God even says, because you didn't ask for wealth, because you didn't ask for long life, I'm going to grant your wish, and I'm going to give you wealth and long life as well. And as we look through Solomon's life, this wisdom that he asked for, this discerning heart, it treats him wonderfully. Everything that happens to him that is good comes from this wisdom. All right, so when he actually becomes the wisest man on earth. And his wisdom is sought after by many people and nations. And all of these people and nations would come to him. The rulers would come to him to ask him questions and riddles and things they needed to figure out. And when they did that, they would bring the finest things of their country and they would present them to Solomon as a gift. So he developed great wealth and great power. Okay, so when we look at Solomon, so we have Solomon's wisdom. And one of the most famous stories about Solomon's wisdom is when two prostitutes were living together. They each have a child. One of the children dies in the middle of the night, and the mother of the one who died switches the babies so that the other one would think that her kid died in the middle of the night. And so they come before King Solomon, and they're saying, hey, whose baby is this? Because, you know, one is saying it's hers, and one is saying it's hers. And Solomon says, go get me a sword. I'm going to cut the baby in half and give one half to this mother and one half to this mother, and they can share him. And one mother says, just let her have him. And the other mother says, that's fine, go ahead. Just cut him in half. Well, Solomon knows that the first mother is actually the true mother because she said she didn't want anything harm to come to that baby. So he gives the child to the first mother. That's the kind of wisdom that he has. And his wisdom, if you read the Proverbs, if you read Ecclesiastes, his wisdom is far beyond some of the things that I can even understand. I mean, I think as we read those, we start to understand them more, but it's deep. I mean, he's got some really, really strong wisdom that he has here. So that pretty much takes up the first four chapters of 1 Kings. All of this stuff has happened. He's become king. He's asked for wisdom. He's doing that. So then the next four chapters, chapters 5 through 8, is all about him building. Okay, he becomes a great builder. First of all, he sets out to build the temple for God because my father was not able to, because his father was fighting many wars and had many things going on. He wasn't able to build a temple to God. So he decides he's going to build a temple. He builds a palace, and he also builds many other projects around their area. So he becomes known as a great builder, and he's very wise. Now, in chapter 9, the temple is finished. And really, from now until chapter 11, we have three chapters left. So the first part of his kingdom, okay, from chapters 1 to chapter 8, he's a good king, everything's going fine. And then chapter 9, it all starts to kind of change. All right, God comes to him again. All right, so we're going to read now. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 9. We're going to start in verse 3. And this is God talking to Solomon. Now, the temple has just been dedicated. They just dedicated the temple to God, and God is going to thank him for that and say that he accepts the dedication. And then he's going to go on and he's going to give him some instructions. So we're starting in verse 3. And we're going to, 1 Kings chapter 9, and we're going to read through verse 9. I have heard the prayer and plea, the Lord said to him, I have heard the prayer and plea you have made before me. I have consecrated this temple which you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there. As for you, if you walk before me in integrity of heart and uprightness as David your father did, and do all I command and observe my decrees and laws, I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, when I said, you shall never fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. Okay, this is the good news. If you do these things, you will have somebody on the throne forever. So far, Solomon has done that. So far, Solomon's done a good job. But God finds reason to warn him in the next few verses. Verse 6, but if you or your sons turn away from me and do not observe the commands and decrees I have given you and go off to serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land I have given them. I will reject this temple I have consecrated for my name. Israel will then become a byword and an object of ridicule among all peoples. And though this temple is now imposing, all who pass by will be appalled and will scoff and say, why has the Lord done such a thing to this land and to this temple? People will answer because they have forsaken the Lord their God who brought their fathers out of Egypt and have embraced other gods, worshiping and serving them. That is why the Lord brought all this disaster on them. Just like we saw before, God is willing to punish those who don't serve him. All he asks of him here is to follow his laws and commands. And I know that's a lot to ask, but he says, do not worship other gods. And he warns him that this is going to happen. We're going to see here in just a minute how he warns him again and again about this exact thing. So King Solomon, we talked about, he became very rich. He became very powerful. He was the wisest man on earth. People came from all over to give him gifts. And up until this point, like I said, he's been a very good king, and he has everything going for him, but he has one weakness, and that's women. That's his one weakness. He's already married the daughter of Pharaoh, because he wants to develop a relationship with Pharaoh so that he can become more powerful, so that he can have the trade route with Egypt and think, you know, peace is going to come about and all of this. So he's already married the daughter of Pharaoh, and he loves him. And it says in the Bible that he loves all of these wives that he's going to take. It says that he just cannot get over his love for them. So in chapter 11, it talks about he married women from all different regions, and we're going to see what happens to him. So now we're going over to chapter 11, and we're going to read the first 13 verses. Okay? And in the two chapters previous to this, or actually in the chapter previous to this, it just talks about all of the wonderful things that Solomon has accumulated. All of the chariots and the gold and the silver and how wealthy he really is. But then it comes to this. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. You see, God again has already reminded Solomon that this is going to be his problem. He has told him three times now. Actually, he spoke to him twice, and then once it's in the law. So that's three times. So he's spoken to him and says, do not worship other gods. And then he's also said in the law, if you intermarry with these people, this is going to be a problem. This is why we don't do that. So he's given him a reason. But nevertheless, Solomon had held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after the other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives, who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their own gods. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, since this is your attitude and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees, which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates. Nevertheless, for the sake of David your father, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. Yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David my servant and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. God punishes Solomon for this sin. He has reminded him over and over and over not to worship other gods, and that if you marry these foreign women, they're going to cause you to do that. He has been warned over and over, but he does it anyway. He has love for these women, and he marries them. Solomon was a wonderful ruler for these many years, but as we look here, and I'll read just the last portion of this, which is the same chapter, chapter 11, verses 41. It says, for all of the other events of Solomon's reign, all he did and the wisdom he displayed, are they not written in the book of the annals of Solomon? Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over Israel for 40 years. Then he rested with his father and was buried in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, was successor to the throne. All of the good that he has done has come crashing down because he doesn't follow what God has commanded him. Building the temple was great. Being a great, wise leader was great. But all of those things mean nothing because he throws it away. And there's so many lessons we can take out of the lifetime of Solomon, but I want us to focus on one particular lesson today as we transition to the New Testament. When Solomon was focused on what he had to accomplish, he was a great king. When he was focused on serving God, when he was focused on building that temple and building that palace and being wise and wanting to have a discerning heart, he accomplished great things. When his focus turned to the worldly things of women and maybe his wealth a little bit, it all came crashing down. We have to remain focused on the task at hand. When we don't, we become complacent and we let Satan get his hooks in us. Okay? And this is for everybody. But when we stay focused on serving our God, we push forward and we are continually growing in our maturity to God. We're going to go over to the New Testament now to 2 Peter. We're going to be in chapter 1 there, and that's where we're going to be the rest of the time today. 2 Peter chapter 1, Peter lays out this idea of growing to maturity for us very well in this chapter. We're going to read this. Let's just read this first, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more. 2 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 3. His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. We're going to stop there for a second. I love that one verse right there because it tells us that God has given us everything that we need, all of the knowledge that we need in order to live the life of godliness that he calls us to. Continuing verse 4. Through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises so that through them you may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to your goodness knowledge, and to your knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. It's not too much to ask, is it? It's pretty deep. We're going to talk about those a little bit more. Let's continue to a couple more verses. Because it says, for if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. But if anyone does not have them, he is nearsighted and blind and has forgotten that he has been cleansed from his past sins. Therefore, my brothers, be all the more eager to make your calling and election sure. For if you do all these things, you will never fall, and you will receive a rich welcome into the eternal kingdom of the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I think sometimes people think that Christianity is a checklist, that we just have a list of things that we do and a list of things that we don't do. And that's not the case. Christianity is a lifestyle. We have to live the way that Jesus lived. We have to serve our God just like he did. But here Paul gives us a list, and although it's in the form of a list, it's still different. These things, I believe that we are working on all of these things at the same time, but until we have at least some of these things, we can't move to the next. Okay, so when we read these, okay, the first one is faith. All right, and it says, add to your faith, which tells me that we already have faith. We have to have faith to add the next step. Okay, and that's what Peter's telling us here. So we have faith. He says, add to your faith goodness. So let's talk about faith. I'm just going to flip over to Hebrews chapter 1 because it defines faith in a biblical way very well for us. And I'm just going to read that. It says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. We have to know that God is God, that Jesus is his son, and that there is a place for us in heaven. We hope for that. We have to know that it's true. We have to believe what we haven't seen. We have not seen Jesus physically. We have not seen God physically, but we know that he is real. We have to know that. We have to have that faith. That's the first step in this process of what's going on here. The next one is goodness, all right? When I think of goodness, some people would say goodness and godliness are the same thing, but they're really not. Goodness is like moral excellence, okay? Having good morals or your virtue, you know, what you hold dear, what the things that you do that make you a moral person. Okay? Then we have knowledge. So we're going to add to our faith, goodness. Then we're going to add to our goodness, knowledge. Now, knowledge is a little bit more than just reading something. It means a familiarity or an awareness or an understanding gained through experience or study. I think far too often we might do a good job of reading the book, but I don't think we study it enough. Study is not listening to a preacher tell you what it says. Study is not just reading the words on the page. Study is truly experiencing what the word says and comparing it to what the actual words are. You know, taking a different translation and looking at it and really starting to understand it, becoming familiar, aware, and taking an understanding away from this based on our experience and our study. It's a lifelong process, this knowledge thing. We have to continually take it in. I met a guy at a church camp up in South Dakota when I was younger. He was probably 75 or 80 years old. I don't know exactly how old he was. And he walked up to me. We were in the mess hall one morning, and he came up to me, and he said, I got it. He said, I finally got it. And I said, you got what? He said, I finally understand the meaning of Psalm 119. He's like, I've been reading that thing my whole life, and I finally got it. Now, if you don't know, Psalm 119 is the longest book in the Bible. And he had been reading it and reading it. He said, you know, and I think that the more I read it, the more I understood. But he said, I finally got it. That's what it's about. It's about that continual study. Even though we've read these words, we may not completely understand them. So we have to continually do that. We have to become aware of it, and we have to really study it. Then we're supposed to add to our knowledge self-control. Now, I've read, when I was doing some research on this self-control idea, I read a lot of different points of view. So I'm going to give you what I took from all of that. Many people think that self-control, because in the King James translation, it actually, the word there is temperance. And people oftentimes associate temperance with alcoholism. Okay, and that is true to a sense, but that's not what this is talking about. Okay, and then others think that it's just, you know, it's being able to control yourself. And in essence, that's true too, but it's deeper than that. So what I define this self-control thing as is having control over our own thoughts and desires, but also giving up control of our lives and letting God take control. That's what it means to be self-controlled. We have to have that ability to say no when we need to. We have to have the ability to act and serve someone when we're called to do so. We don't know what form that's going to come in, but we have to have control over our thoughts and desires. And that, again, that's a really hard thing. I think there are many people, and I would say everyone at some point deals with this. The idea of when we think of something, what are we going to do with that? What are we going to do with that thought? Are we going to act on that thought and do something wrong? Or are we going to stay away from that thought? Or in the other way, are we going to act on that thought and do good, if that's what it's called? Or are we going to sit back and let somebody else handle it? So we have to have control of our own thoughts and desires, and we have to be willing to let God take control. The next one is perseverance. Perseverance is an interesting concept to me, because James says in James chapter 1, he says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because the testing of your faith develops perseverance. So how are we supposed to take joy when things are coming at us and we just can't control it? You know, I always say when it rains, it pours. When something's going wrong, it seems like everything's going wrong. But yet, instead of being frustrated, instead of throwing a fit or, you know, doing things we shouldn't do, we're supposed to take joy in that, because we know that when our faith is tested like that, that we develop that perseverance. And then he goes on to say that perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. That tells me that we're all going to face these trials. We're all going to face hardship. We're all going to face times where we're going to not maybe completely understand what God is doing in our lives, but we have to stay steadfast in that, and we have to use that to develop this perseverance. And then he says, add to your perseverance godliness. I heard a preacher say about 3 weeks ago at a Bible conference I was at that in this list, if he could get to godliness, he thinks he'd be doing pretty good. Because godliness is a big thing to ask. I talked about just for a second that godliness and goodness are sometimes lumped in the same thing, but they are different. A godliness is living in obedience of God's commands, but from a principle of love to him and reverence to his holy character and precepts. It goes right back to that sin thing. Anything that takes us away from God, anything that we break the character of God is sin. And so if we need to be able to change, we need to be able to act in such a way that not only are we following his commands, but we're also holding him in reverence because of his holy character and the precepts that he has set before us. And then he says, brotherly kindness. And brotherly kindness seems like such a simple, simple thing. It actually comes from the word in the Greek, Philadelphia. Okay, our city is called, Philadelphia, the city in the United States is called the city of brotherly love. And that's because that's what that word means in the Greek. Brotherly kindness is the love that one Christian brother or sister shows to another. But it's so much deeper than that. It's that the love that encompasses everything, because the next thing then is love, and that's God's love. And I'm going to say that God's love is a purposeful commitment to sacrificial action of another. In other words, you are so committed to that person that you're willing to give up everything for that person. That is God's love. Loving God is equated with obeying his word, and those two things are not inseparable, or they are inseparable, and God is love. Love encompasses all that God is. So when we think of brotherly kindness and love in this list, that is everything that God is. That is becoming like the character of God. And that's what we're called to. And we can get there. You know, it's kind of a scary thought because we think, like I said, it's a continual process. We continue moving in this direction. We continue moving. We can't be like Solomon. We have to be like Solomon at the beginning of his life. He was so focused on building the temple and building these things and acquiring this wealth. And he wanted wisdom and he wanted to discern. He wanted to govern the people. But he let his weaknesses follow him as well. And we have to be focused. If he would have stayed focused on his task of serving God, he wouldn't have married these, he wouldn't have intermarried with these wives. He wouldn't have had so many. He wouldn't have had that. He would have been able to overcome that, but he wasn't able to do that. In the same way, David, David was focused on everything that he was doing, but in that one moment where he saw Bathsheba, he allowed his focus to wane from what the task was at hand in serving God, and he sinned against him. We're all going to sin, and we talked about last time that when we don't deal with that sin, in other words, we don't ask for forgiveness and then have repentance, which means to turn away from that sin, if we continue living in that sin, then we are not doing what God asks us, and eventually it leads to death. We've seen it over and over and over and over in the Bible of people who lost their lives or lost what they loved most because they did not deal with their sin. They ignored it. Just like Israel in Micah chapter 6 said, but God, we can give you 1,000 rams. I'll give you my first child. What else do you want? I've been giving you all of this sacrifice. But what they didn't get was God wanted you to stop sinning. God didn't want you to just sin and then offer something as a sacrifice. He wanted you to stop sinning. And he wanted you to live a life in him. And as we close here today, as we think about this growing to maturity, I want you to think about this. And I really hope that you'll go home and study 2 Peter chapter 1, because I only touched the surface. I mean, you talk about the topic of love, a preacher could talk probably preach 100 sermons on love and probably not even cover all the information there is. It's all a lot. It's all a broad aspect. But what I want us to see is that we have to stay focused on our task of serving God, and we have to realize that it's never going to stop until we get to heaven. We are always going to be striving to move forward in our love and our understanding of God, and we're always going to be moving toward that growth and maturity that we need to do. Our sin is very, very serious, and it escalates to the point of death when we do not deal with it. We must always strive to stay focused on serving our God's decrees and commands and devoting our lives to a constant state of striving to grow to maturity, and this growth will never end. If there's a way this morning that we can help you in your growth to maturity, please come as together we stand and sing.